Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt. Als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hallo und willkommen zu Gegenpressing, der Bundesliga-Podcast. I'm your host Manu Fed. He's Stefan Bienkowski, and also now joining us full-time for an undisclosed transfer free on before, like after he was previously on loan with Gegenpressing, Matt Ford. Matt, exciting news. You're full-time now with this. I want to say congrats, but I don't think you know what you got yourself into. So how's it going?
I mean, it's a free transfer, but I'm looking forward to the bonus payments, which you promised me.
Sure.
I'm sure they'll come through.
I think he's on a Naby Keita pay per play deal, so we'll see how long it lasts. Hopefully no dodgy injuries.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I hope your hands are not made out of glass or paper, or there's some English term that Chris Williams always used to use, something that cracks easily. I can't remember, but I hope your constitution is better. Naby Keita's mad.
I hope so too. Although it was particularly good on Saturday night in Darmstadt. It was freezing.
Yeah. I saw the pictures. It looked cold. Felt bad for anyone who was there. Sorry, Matt.
Yeah, cheers.
Well, it's great to have you on. And of course, now that you are a full-time member of the team, people are going to read you frequently. I mean, you've already done quite a bit in recent months. We're going to have you feature now every week, which is great. Obviously, there's still going to be the extra match report when one of us is at a game. And, you know, Stefan, you did a really good job outlining the way content is going to be looking like moving forward. We binned the Monday bulletin because now we have Matt with full-time content, right? So slightly different going forward. Want to add to that, if there is major breaking news, like, you know, we have done in the past, like when I covered Harry Kane on location, for example, or Max Eberl, or so it happens to join Bayern Munich, that kind of stuff is going to be still covered with an extra piece of content, if it warrants or if it's big enough of a story. So yeah, not too much change going forward. Most of our full-time subscribers should be used to it. If you are not a subscriber, this might be a good time to do it, guys. This is the free podcast. You get a lot of extra content if you do subscribe. You get 3 articles a week, 2 bonus podcasts on top of that. So go check that out.
You get this very show without annoying adverts.
Oh, speaking of adverts, this episode of the Gegenpressing podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. With the playoffs in full swing and the NBA season in full swing, BetOnline has you covered with all the up-to-second odds, news, and scores. With additional odds, lines, trends, and info on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. Head there today to get into the action and see all the updated odds. Remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, BELIEVE, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Yeah, let's start with this match day. This is of course the big recap show. We have a lot to discuss, and I'm going to try to do it in chronological order because I've been accused of not always doing that, Stefan. So I'm gonna try to be on my best behavior today, and I want to start with the Bayern Hoffenheim game. Stefan, we talked on the previous show that we suspect Bayern will be on their best behavior. The result says they were. And I think that they did see the game out in very convincing fashion. But there was a time, and Matt, I think you and I talked a little bit about it during the game, where Hoffenheim looked like they could come back. Maximilian Bayer in particular, missing a huge chance. Neuer coming up with a great stop after a corner kick as well when it was still 1-0. Bayern were at their best behavior, honoring Franz Beckenbauer, but I think there was a time when Hoffenheim looked like they could steal this one.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, and on paper, it looks like a comfortable, straightforward win for Bayern. And we'll get on to the things that Bayern did well in the set, particularly Musiala. But yeah, you're right, the game could have gone very, very differently had Hoffenheim taken their chances a bit better, been a little bit more clinical, particularly Max Bayer. Actually started quite early. I mean, you're referring to those few minutes in the second half where there were a few chances in quick succession. But I think there was actually even before Bayern took the lead, there was an early counter-attack led by Max Bayer, and it ended up with Andrei Kramaric firing a shot pretty wildly over the bar. Thought, with a little bit more composure, Hoffenheim could have made a little bit more out of that. Anton Stach also fired a shot over at some point. So it wasn't completely plain sailing for Bayern. And as much as Bayer, he's been impressive this season, but as much as he has missed those chances in the second half, I think credit to Manuel Neuer as well. He spent a lot of time stood around in -6, -7, -8. I don't know how cold it was down in Munich. It looked absolutely bitter. So I think credit to Manuel Neuer to have spent such long periods of the game doing very little in those temperatures to then, be in a physical situation where he can react the way he did. I mean, particularly one-on-one against Kramaric, spreading himself well to save that header from Max Bayer. I thought he really, particularly the half volley that Bayer then glanced off the bar, that really had to be going in, doesn't it?
Yeah, the one-on-one, right? He does beat Neuer, but as he said, the ball comes off the bar. Stefan, we talked about players, strikers in the bonus show last week, and who we think is going to score the most goals from the winter break onwards. Harry Kane scores again. That is the most. He equalizes a record by Lewandowski for the most goals at this point of the season, and he can break the record for the first half of the season because they still have that extra game against Union Berlin, right? How do we still feel confident that anyone is actually going to score more goals than Harry Kane in the second half of the season, Stefan?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, we did make a point of saying, it's more than likely not going to be anyone except Harry Kane. I mean, obviously Patrick Schick is probably the best one there. We did kind of hedge our bets to an extent. But yeah, look, as we said in the kind of previous show, this is a game in which we thought Bayern were really going to be at their best for the most part. Considering the context of the match, obviously Franz Beckenbauer's unfortunately passing. I do kind of feel like, despite all that, it felt like kind of typical Bayern. I think a lot of our subscribers actually talked a lot about this, actually, in the sense that, they went through the motions. Individual players stood out, Musiala in particular, in that game. Obviously, Harry Kane needed just kind of half a chance on the edge of the box. He turns and he just kind of fires into the back of the net. That's kind of what we expect of him, and what we always have expected of him. It'll be just intriguing to see, how they do in the weeks to come, because it felt to me very much like rather than Bayern stepping up to the occasion because of obviously what happened with Beckenbauer or looking refreshed after a long break, it felt like the same Bayern that we saw prior to the winter break. And I thought it was quite interesting that, Hoffenheim similarly kind of, as Matt just kind of went through all the kind of chances they had, they did rack up a pretty decent XG of 1.45 in this game, which, most teams don't tend to do. But this is kind of what we've seen of Hoffenheim this season. They actually have the third best XG from away games in the Bundesliga this season. So only Dortmund and Bayern have actually created more chances on the road. But the problem that Hoffenheim have is they also actually have the fifth worst defence on the road this season, or the sixth worst, actually. So they create a lot of chances and they concede a lot of chances. And maybe if they were up against, a Leipzig or a Stuttgart or Werder Bremen or whoever, a mid-table or even like another top six side, then they maybe would have grabbed a few goals themselves in this game. But against Bayern, if you're not capable of kind of putting those handful of chances away, you're still going to end up losing this game 2-0 or 3-0, because that's just the way Bayern play, especially at the Allianz Arena.
Especially when you've got Musiala on that sort of form. He really was good. I mean, don't know how often we say that. I heard somewhere actually he's already made 100 Bundesliga appearances, I think, for Bayern, or even more, which I can't remember if we ever heard it, but it certainly made me think twice. 100, surely not. Especially because the comparison that was made was with Christian Streich and Bundesliga games that he's coached, and obviously is a lot more, but it's not as many more as many more as you'd perhaps think. But Musiala has been, obviously has been around for perhaps longer than we think, and despite his still pretty young years, he's still going from strength to strength. Fantastic on Friday night, I think.
Was his 101 Bundesliga game.
101 Bundesliga games, and yeah. Well, even if you then add other competitions as well, even
144.
More. There you go. So I think that's, yeah, I wouldn't have guessed it was that high, but there you go.
And he's only 20. But yeah, you know, those numbers are very similar to Thomas Müller's numbers at the same time.
Here.
You know, like all of a sudden he was very quickly at a lot of games. Because when he's fit, he always plays, right?
And why not? When he's pulling off moments like that little, the turn that he pulls off in the box just before the first goal. It's absolutely rapid. It's a fantastic turn. I mean, like, perhaps Baumann should do better with the shot, but he's hit it so powerfully. Really, really impressive.
Yeah. Well, he's already on his third Bayern coach, if I'm not mistaken. He came through under Hansi Flick, and then obviously Julian Nagelsmann, and now Thomas Tuchel. So if you put it that way, it explains why he's already racked up so many games. But yeah, I think he, maybe more so than a lot of players, really needed that break. He has looked a little jaded for some time now at Bayern, because he was just so overplayed last season. Even going back to Hansi Flick, actually, where he just kind of popped up out of nowhere and suddenly became the answer to all of Bayern's problems. But, you know, he's still averaging, I think, 0.85 goals and assists per 90, which is a little bit down on last season, 0.9, but it's still really, obviously, incredibly impressive. But, you know, Manu, we kind of talked about this on that kind of show where we're talking about who could be the top goal scorers in the Rückrunde. And, you know, when you look at that Bayern team, one thing we did note is that in attack, it's very much Harry Kane, Leroy Sané, and Jamal Musiala. Then there's a big drop-off in terms of output, in terms of players on form. And, you know, it's really important that Bayern have the likes of Kane bouncing back, Jamal Musiala bouncing back, and obviously Leroy Sané too, because if any of those three players really drop off or pick up a big injury, then, you know, Thomas Tuchel will have to work his magic with other forwards in his squad.
I think that's those two goals, you know, because all of a sudden Jamal Musiala is on 5 goals and 2 assists in 11 games. That reads a lot better than it did previously, right? Which was like 10 games, 3 goals and 2 assists. It's interesting how one game can really skew a statistic in a better way. He has, and you're right, he has looked a little jaded at times. Picked up a muscle injury on his first game. He missed two games of that, and then he had an upper thigh injury as well, right? Midway through the Hinrunde, and missed two games of that. And those are these tiny muscle injuries that you pick up when you overplayed. You know, it's nothing major.
Particularly
it's like,
at that age, his body's still developing, I think. So yeah, you're totally going to get those little knocks.
And it's actually, I think it's quite interesting that Bayern Munich went on a training camp this week, Portugal. Obviously they had the Friday game, right? And then they're not playing again until next Sunday. So they have a nice 6-day window where they can, like 6 full days of training. I mean, obviously because they have the 2 travel days, but in the sun. And I think it's actually really interesting that they chose to do that. And that can go a long way for the rest of the season to have that time off. I mean, when was the last time Harry Kane ever had that luxury? Probably never, hey?
Yeah, I think it's particularly important because they've got that extra English week, as the Germans call it, when you have those midweek games. With the postponed game against Union to come. So yeah, I think a good idea for them to get a bit of warm weather training in. this week, and they're going for 4 days, I think, aren't they? To is it Faro in the south of Portugal?
Portugal, so, Faro. Is it? I think it's 4 days. Is it 4 days?
I think it's a 4 day training camp. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Left it on Sunday with Eric Dyer, who's now on the squad. Curious to see if there's going to be another player in the plane when they come back. But I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. I think Bayern Munich are once again leaving their time with transfer decisions. There's also a big Max Eberl story coming. But guys, we opted that we're going to discuss Max Eberl and his role at the club as part of a full bonus show later this week. So if you are not a subscriber, sorry, this is going to be for subscribers only. But we want to discuss that in great length because there's a lot to that story, right, Stefan?
There absolutely is. And we discovered that when you and Matt tried to explain what Max Eberl's new job was, and 15 minutes later you were none the wiser. So we figured if anything deserves its own 40-minute show, it is that.
No, Stefan, you were none the wiser. I thought we described it pretty well, so you were none the wiser.
I was.
But you...
Well, okay. If you two explained it for 15 minutes and I still had no idea, that's on you guys, okay?
Okay, well...
One extra thing on Bayern before we move on. I've mentioned it in my new newsletter this week. So it's slightly like fan culture related. There was a bit of a throwaway comment that Thomas Tuchel made at full time regarding the atmosphere. Did you two pick up on that?
No, I did see that there was a banner about the multi-club organization that Bayern is becoming.
Well, yeah, there's that. I mean, Tuchel's comments weren't related to that, and there is that, though. That's also you can read about that in the newsletter as well. Bayern's tentative steps into multi-club ownership.
Tentative. I mean, they've already signed those contracts, and it's all done. I wrote an article on that for Transfermarkt like a few months ago.
Yeah. Well, there's been some criticism of that. But what Tuchel was referring to was the continued anti-DFL investor protest. It wasn't across the whole country on this match day, but Bayern Munich's fans did repeat the 12-minute atmosphere boycott at the start of the game, which led Thomas Tuchel, so I think, speaking to DAZN at full time to say that I think quotes no idea, something about the DFL investor, whatever. And then he said, yeah, maybe it's about time we had a bit more enthusiasm at these home games. I think that's. I just think it's a dangerous game for football coaches to play. Yeah.
Für die scheiß Stimmung seid ihr doch selber verantwortlich, Matt.
I think it is. Yeah. But I've always thought that professional football coaches, professional football players, indeed anyone who sort of makes their living from professional football should be a little bit more cautious before having a go at fan protests, given that it's the fans that are paying to be there and watch their club, literally their club. It's not Thomas Tuchel's club. So I was thinking, Thomas Tuchel would probably be well advised to, maybe inform himself a little bit more about what the protests are about. I'm sure the ultras would be happy to explain it to him.
Then that's a very good point.
It is. I mean, this is an old story at Bayern Munich, the club and the discontent with the atmosphere at the stadium. My flippant argument is if you want to have a good atmosphere in a stadium in Munich, there's another club that you can go to. It's loud and rowdy. But neither did that.
get a little digs in while you can, I mean.
Just saying. I mean, this is an age-old story. As I just said, Ole Hoeneß shouted out what I just shouted out on the podcast once at a general assembly, right? The fans are responsible for the shit atmosphere themselves, and this is a quote. So
I thought worth mentioning, just because there was that specific reference to the DFL protest, Thomas Tuchel was clearly aware that there was a protest and what it was about. And then to dismiss it like that, particularly with literally his phraseology was something investors whatever. And I thought that's not a particularly good.
Yeah,
look.
But you know that this is also a head coach who's previously coached for PSG and Chelsea. So you know, what do you expect?
Yes, well,
I mean, honestly, I don't want to dwell too much on it because we have a lot to cover today. This could be another one that we can maybe explore in extra content because I think there's a lot there. Matt, Dortmund, you were there. It was cold. It wasn't also something that was heartwarming for long periods of time. I think the best thing about this game from a Dortmund perspective, okay, two things maybe, is the result and the fact that Jadon Sancho provided us an assist to Marco Reus. The game itself,
the result was
wasn't good.
Yeah, like you said, the result, good. Jadon Sancho's return from a Dortmund perspective, good. I would add to that Jamie Vinyl-Gittens, one of his best performances, at least as a starter. He's been starting the starting 11 increasingly regularly in the run-up to Christmas, and this was his best start, in my opinion. Really, really powerful dribble to set up the first goal. Really impressive. And Ian Mattson, obviously newly signed on loan from Chelsea, starting at left back and slipped into that role as if he'd been playing for Borussia Dortmund for 5 years.
Yeah, I thought he was good.
Really, really solid addition. Actually thought that Dortmund could have made, and I would have liked to have seen them make more of Mattson on the left. I think he actually hinted at showing more of what Dortmund, what would do them good. One particular moment sticks in my mind, I noticed at the time, Marcel Sabitzer picks up the ball in midfield and Mattson makes the run down the left. It's a fairly risky pass, I suppose, but Sabitzer can attempt that through ball in between, centre-back and full-back to play in Mattson, who's running in there. But rather than going for that, he actually puts his foot on the ball and with his hands physically beckons to Mattson to come back. And I just thought, once again, it took all the pace out of Dortmund's game. There wasn't any in it anyway. And there's Mattson trying to inject a bit, trying to do something with the game. And Sabitzer sort of dragged him back. I thought that was quite telling, quite frustrating, but very much summed up how Borussia Dortmund played. I think I wrote as much in those wonderful time points that, ultimately, a 3-0 win to start off the year away at Darmstadt, it looks fantastic. And it's three welcome points, and it looked particularly good given that RB Leipzig lost, so they've closed the gap there as well.
And Stuttgart too, right?
But it really wasn't good. It was very much of the same. It was slow, it was sloppy, there was no idea. Apart from Jamie Vinyl-Gittens setting up that goal for Julian Brandt, there were no other accents being put on the game by any Dortmund players. If you can look at another positive second half, it's that Edin Terzic's substitutions have once again had a desired effect, and that in itself is obviously a good thing. We've seen that on loads of occasions now from Edin Terzic, and he's made no bones about it himself. He makes a point most weeks of saying how, we have a squad and we like having these impact players off the bench. And one of them is Yusuf Moukoko, does that a lot. He did it again.
I was going to ask you about him. I'm glad you're bringing it up.
Yeah, well, he was impressive. He scored a good goal, although the game was over by that point. But he's done what he's done on so many occasions. And then, it says a lot and speaks for Terzic's substitutions that it's Marco Reus and Jadon Sancho who have combined for the second goal. That was the most important goal, probably, really finished the game off. But whether impact subs constantly week after week is a sustainable way forward long term, I have my doubts, and I think that we have to see improvement in lots of other areas.
Stefan, we talked about strikers and how they might perform for the second half of the season, and neither one of us in this podcast mentioned Niklas Füllkrug. And I thought that he had again another performance where I'm like, why is Moukoko sitting on the bench? Matt, don't worry, you can probably add to this as well. But I wonder when the point comes where isn't it more useful to play Moukoko in this lineup rather than having him always come off the bench when your expensive center forward up front isn't delivering?
Yeah, it's a very fair point. It's not just one expensive forward, it's two, actually, if you include Sebastian Haller. Of course, we also have to contextualize Haller's situation, and that's by no means his fault, why maybe he's not up to speed. But, you know, and this is the kind of paradoxical thing. And, you know, Matt's absolutely right that the substitutions did well. But for every good substitution, there's kind of usually a baffling selection in the first place from Terzic. And look, this was a pretty easy start to the season for Dortmund. We talked about in the previous show, Darmstadt at home have been pretty dreadful this year. It's a game that Dortmund should win comfortably 99 out of 100 times. And despite that, there's still that Gregor Kobel wonder save at 1-0. And you have to kind of wonder, I mean, I don't know if you call it a wonder save or just sheer luck, maybe.
I think he spread himself really well.
Yeah. So that is a fantastic stop. Goalkeeper's Union defending him. He the fact that he managed to, like, well, because when you look at the slow-mo, he spreads his legs, right? And that is really what makes it so difficult, that against the run of play, with the movement going the other way, he recognizes where it's going to go. That's a fantastic
It's definitely up there with the save that Neuer makes from Max Bayern in the
so
Bayern
good.
Game.
Yeah. But exactly. And the thing is that, like, you take that, you then take the Moukoko goal in particular as well, which is a fantastic individual moment. Maybe say the same about Julian Brandt's goal, which is, I don't know if that's just also sheer luck or just incredible finesse. But, you know, I said, we were talking about this at the weekend, all still scratch our heads over his Dortmund performance. And I think the way I described it was that these days under Terzic, Dortmund are like 90% vibes, 10% just hoping that the good players do something to win the game. And it still kind of felt like that in this game. And I thought actually Matt's comment about Sabitzer and Mattsson there was really interesting, because I have often thought at times this season that different pockets of this team want to play in different ways. Some want to play faster, some want to play slower, some want to play a high line, some want to play a deep line. And it kind of chimes with this kind of criticism we have of Terzic, that it doesn't really feel that there's any coherent plan. It doesn't feel like everyone's singing from the same hymn sheet in the way that, you know, Leverkusen are, or Frankfurt are. And that's perhaps a perfect example. I mean, yeah, of course, Madsen's a new player. Maybe he's not used to the way things are supposed to be done. So you kind of give the... Well, yeah. Perhaps that's the way to look at it. But this is just the overall feeling that I always get when I watch Dortmund. It's a team of individuals. There's no cohesive system that every single player is playing to. Sabitzer's played one way, Emre Can's played one way, Moukoko comes on and does something completely different from what Füllkrug's been doing for the last, 70 or 80 minutes. And at no point does it feel like Terzic is in control of any of that. But they won, and I'm sure if any Dortmund fan is still listening to this after we just tore them apart for winning 3-0,
But it really does put you in a difficult position. And I mean, all of us as journalists are in that position in the mix zone after the game, where I think we spoke to Gregor Kobel, we spoke to Sebastian Kehl, the Spartan director, and then they know as well, particularly Kehl, it's very difficult to ask him critical questions slagging off the performance when he's literally just he's just overseen a 3-0 win. It is difficult to criticise, but I think we have to. We've seen it.
Put it into context, right? It's a good 3-0 win against an opponent that is the worst in the Bundesliga. And for large parts of that game, it wasn't good. It wasn't a good performance. And
I was surprised at one, just before half-time, sat next to a colleague in the press box. He pointed out that, Darmstadt have... He's quite surprised that Darmstadt have had 55% possession. I was surprised too, but only because I thought that value was low. Such had been Darmstadt's control of the ball. I thought they would have had much more than 55% possession. Admittedly, they didn't really do much with it, but that's why they're Darmstadt on the bottom of the league.
And I mean, of course, if you're one of the top teams, you have one of the best goalkeepers, maybe the best goalkeeper in the league, right? In Kobel, so of course you hope that he produces a stop like that, but him making that save isn't a given. And when it does, happens if it goes 1-1, right?
I think it was also at 1-0, but just before half time, when is it Tim Skarker, I think, sends a half volley over the bar late on in the first half. Again, it's not the easiest chance to take, but you really would think if he hits the target with that, I don't think Kobel saves it, and then Darmstadt have got their goal. Yes, not overly convincing from Dortmund. You mentioned Niklas Füllkrug before. There was one bizarre moment which I need to mention. Play was interrupted very briefly in the second half when a pitch invader ran to the pitch, just on his own from the Darmstadt section. And you know, you've seen this before when people want to get a selfie with Ronaldo or Messi or whoever. He wanted a selfie with Niklas Füllkrug, which I thought was a strange choice, and I really hope it's worth the ban that he's going to get.
Yeah, I mean, lifelong obsession with
clearly
Germany's most famous missing tooth. Okay, well, guys, we need to wrap up the Dortmund discussion and move on to Leverkusen. This episode of the Gegenpressing podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. With the playoffs in full swing and the NBA season in full swing, BetOnline has you covered with all the up-to-second odds, news, and scores. With additional odds, lines, trends, and info on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. Head there today to get into the action and see all the updated odds. Remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, BELIEVE, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. They played on what I call the pitch where lots of championship dreams go to die in Augsburg. And with that, I mean really just Borussia Dortmund dropping needless points almost every year. It looked like for a very long time that despite Leverkusen's dominance in this game, they will drop 2 points here. And we all know how tight the championship race is. We all know the pace that Bayern Munich and Leverkusen are setting at the top of the table. It's breathless. It's really, really amazing stuff when you think about it. So dropping 2 points in Augsburg is really something you cannot afford right now. And it looked like they would until Alejandro Grimaldo. And this is a stunning goal. What was it, 92nd, 93rd minute? Very, very late. Scores the winner. And that's, you know, I was thinking up, was it Palacios? Sorry, of course. Ezequiel Palacios. Yeah, short Latinos. I apologize.
Grimaldo had about very long range efforts in the game, which were also by Darmstadt, but Palacios with the winner.
You know what is the sort of performance where I think that is the sort of game that Bayern Munich usually wins and, you know, gets those points regardless of not having a good performance. And they're very good at this. The fact that Leverkusen are now winning those games as well, Stefan, makes me think that this is for real.
Yeah, it was an incredible performance. I mean, not only the fact that they had so many chances. I mean, you know, Matt mentioned the fact that Grimaldo, he smacks the ball off the crossbar as well, I think 30 minutes into the game. And he's been so incredible this season. Like, just to take a minute to appreciate that. He's been not just in terms of, like, your classic wing-back, but he scores goals, he takes free kicks, he moves into midfield, he creates chances. He's just been this... He's been as good on the left wing as Frimpong has been for a number of seasons on the right wing, in my opinion, and has added a whole new layer to that kind of Leverkusen attack. And you know, it's kind of what we've come to expect from Leverkusen now. It's a team performance that they don't change things at all. They don't panic. They keep going through the, you know, they keep going through the methods, and they just keep breaking teams down. And I mean, I know Augsburg had a few half chances when they kind of tried to break and. But you know, if you look at the stats from this game, they're really quite incredible. Augsburg didn't have a single shot on target and only had two off target. Their XG was 0.13, possession 34%, and this is them at home. And you're absolutely right, that's the kind of performances we expect from a classic Bayern result. You know, Bayern at the top of the game, they go with these small teams and absolutely dominate, and everyone around Europe complains about how boring the Bundesliga is. But it wasn't, and you know, it was just incredible. And as you said, you know, for the sake of the title race, it was impressive. But no, I'm just really impressed with Leverkusen. I'm impressed with the way they play, the tactics. You know, we just talked about Dortmund and how it's all kind of vibes, and they just kind of make it up from one week to the next. But you can tell that Leverkusen, and very much the kind of Spanish school of thought in terms of coaching and style of football, is we're going to keep doing this the way we do it, no matter what. And, you know, so far it's worked wonders for them.
That's actually what impressed me the most about this result, is that there never was a sense of panic in this match. They tightened the screw towards the end of the game, because they're like, we do need a goal here to win this, right? Obviously, but you never had the sense that they were going to exit their match plan, which was keep possession, keep crossing the ball, find spaces, try to break down the opponent, do it methodically. You know, a lot of teams that are in this situation resort to the high ball into the box, right, repeatedly. They didn't. They kept the ball on the ground, which I thought, you know, did then provide them the actual opportunity to score the winner. And I think that speaks for Javi Alonso and the discipline that he has installed in this team, and, you know, really make sure that the players stick to the principles even when things are very, very difficult. And that, again, is for me a sign that, you know, they know what they're doing. And I think if you know what you're doing as a player and you have the confidence to do that, after the 90th minute, we're still looking for a winner. That speaks volume for me. Matt, do you have anything to add to this?
No, maybe there's a couple of devil's advocate points, really, and to criticise Leverkusen a bit. And I accept I really am sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel here, yeah, nitpicking. But Augsburg did have chances. I forget who it was. He was flagged just offside. And there was also the chance where, again, sorry to any massive Augsburg fans listening, the name escapes me. He's rounded Lukas Fodetsky, and I think he's put his shot over the bar. There were chances there. Another one that sticks in my mind, or one that I've noted down, was when there was Demirovic again, but with another chance in the first half, I think, when he's latched onto a long ball, which all three Leverkusen defenders have sort of stood there and allowed to bounce, and Demirovic has still been able to bring it down, make a bit of space.
Yeah, Demirovic was actually twice, second half.
Yeah, he puts his shot wide. Maybe you can explain that with the fact that Leverkusen's first choice back three were missing. Obviously, you've got Kusunu and Tabsoba at the Africa Cup of Nations, and Jonathan Tah didn't feature. Do you know the reason for that? Was he injured, pick up a knock? What was the reason behind that?
There was a bunch of people with knocks. I mean, Wirtz didn't start either, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't have the actual reason for it.
Either way, they got away with it. So perhaps you can understand that they're going to, you know, let the odd chance through when it's not the first, not that first choice back three. But perhaps that is nitpicking. The way they passed away with it, as Stefan was saying, was extremely Bayern-like. Got the headline in Kicker magazine today here, as in Bayern. All you got to do is take the N off the end. It's the same. It's the same word, and they did look like Bayern. When that goal went in, I was watching it in the press room in Darmstadt, just ahead of kickoff in that game. And there were a few, it wasn't just other journalists who were all sort of looking at each other, sort of nodding, yeah, that was like watching Bayern, wasn't it? There were also a few members of Borussia Dortmund's like media team, and you could tell they were thinking the same thing as well. Really just sort of ominous form.
Just to jump in quickly, Matt, Ta was rested because he's on four yellow cards. So if he'd picked up a yellow card in this game, he would have missed the Leipzig game.
They've got RB next week, haven't they? Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
There we go.
Massive game. Massive.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with Matt. Like, you can turn this, there's a situation in which this game does kind of turn on its head. Augsburg get a last minute or late goal or something on the break and ruin Leverkusen's dreams. And there's also the wider context as well, is that this was all with Boniface on the injury bench. You know, they've just lost their star striker to an injury. It looks like he's going to be out till April, I think.
I can't believe how much bad luck that is. I mean, it was honestly bad enough for Leverkusen losing him for a month. As much as it was a great opportunity for Boniface to go and play for Nigeria, but losing him for a month was bad enough. But now to lose him for even longer, I thought Patrick Schick looked a bit rusty as well. I think he missed a one-on-one.
Yeah, he did. But all I was going to add to that was that, you know, Leverkusen failing to score and potentially even losing to Augsburg the game after they lose Boniface, suddenly people start to panic because they've lost a star striker and they can't score a goal. So, you know, it's these little fine edges that, you know, decide football games, and as a result, the consequences ripple throughout the season. And that's kind of why we obviously love the sport so much. But it'd be really interesting to see how they do against Leipzig, because I'm sure we'll talk about them later in the show, but I actually thought Leipzig looked okay against Frankfurt despite the result, and I think it's still going to be a really tough match.
Actually, let's move to that. That's a great transition, because that's next on
it's
the
almost,
agenda
almost
here.
Almost as if we planned it in advance, Manu. Imagine that.
Because you're right, next Saturday, Leipzig against Leverkusen is the scheduled top spiel, and you know what it is. You know, a glance at the table tells you it's first against fourth. I thought Leipzig were going to win their game against Frankfurt. They did not, which is really, really impressive for Frankfurt. And I think Frankfurt did really well there, away as well, right? That assist to Ansgar Knauf by Nkunku, wow, that's incredible. Just slices open that entire Leipzig back line, and then Leipzig just don't find a way to score. You know, once again, Frankfurt very disciplined. And Stefan, you wanted to talk about this game in particular because I think you identified a few things that you thought were interesting.
Yeah, I mean, well, I wanted to talk about it because I watched it, and I might as well make use of that. But yeah, it was an interesting game. I think I described it, you know, to subscribers in our live chat on Substack as, you know, the definition of a smash and grab, because it was Frankfurt's only shot on target for the entire match, and they then obviously just bunkered down and waited, waited, defended, sometimes heroically, sometimes fortunately, and much like, well, I don't know, actually, much like maybe the Leverkusen game where, you know, they huffed and puffed and then they, you know, well, actually the opposite of that, I suppose, where we said, you know, these things can be sided on a knife edge, that Leverkusen got the breakthrough and Leipzig just didn't. But, you know, I feel like if you play this game another 99 times, Leipzig probably win it 2-3-0, to be perfectly honest with you. The Frankfurt goal was incredible, and Nkunku will probably never recreate another assist like that for the rest of his career. It was, I'm trying to think of who it reminded me of. Maybe like really old fashioned, like Man United era David Beckham, perhaps. Maybe Matt can maybe think of a moment where it's just the way he manages it to curl it round the entire defence and pull everyone out of position. And also, Canel's quite happy to tap it home. But I don't, the two things that really stood out to me in this game where, you know, there was, for Frankfurt, there was Mario Götze, who I've actually wrote my newsletter on this week because I was just really impressed with the way he just kind of floats through these games. And, you know, we all know what Götze can do, you know, attacking sense. He's a very tidy player. He's a very technical player. But over the course of the last kind of year, and especially this season under Top Muller, he's turned into more of a defensive player, actually. And kind of highlighted in my newsletter, but his defensive stats are actually quite impressive, you know, in terms of he knows how to intercept, he knows how to block, he knows how to get in the way of other playmakers. And alongside Larsson, who's obviously a very, very young player who's, you know, full of energy, but perhaps lacks experience to know where to stand, know how to press properly, you know, how to counterattack and things, they make quite a good partnership. And, you know, amongst the frustration of that entire Leipzig team, I found it quite nice just watching Götze almost just dance through them. Never seemed to put a foot wrong, never seemed to be pressured on the ball. And that was really nice. On the flip side, you then had his opposite number, Xavi Simons, who was like a man possessed trying to turn this game around. And I know we've mentioned it before, but it's just really quite incredible how quickly he has just grabbed this Leipzig team by the scruff of the neck and said, I'm in charge now, and this is my team, and you're all going to do what I tell you. And Not in an aggressive way, but just because of his sheer talent. And that obviously works really well when it works, but in games like this, Leipzig sometimes look a little bit like a one team or a one trick pony, where they have a lot of attacking players in Openda and Sesko, and they have a lot of runners in, you know, your Campos and your Schlagers and your Baumgartners, and obviously both fullbacks are just bombing down each wing. But that entire system is relied on Xavi Simons kind of threading that needle, and if you can kind of put a man on him or he has an off game, the whole system kind of begins to break down.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that the who Benjamin Sesko, Louis Openda duo up front didn't have the impact that I think you need to expect, right? And I think that is, if you have an XG of, the XG was 2.74 to, let me get pull up the number again, 2.74 to 0.78 in Leipzig's favor. And you know, we highlighted Openda as one of those players that could score a lot of goals from here on out. And the fact that that partnership didn't quite work is an interesting one. I mean, obviously, we're going to see how it's going to differ next week against Leverkusen. And I think, you know, that is such a massive, massive game for Leipzig now, because you sense that they are going to be the victims here if Dortmund do pull their things together and maybe roll up the table. And, you know, they're going to look over their shoulder. I mean, Matt, if Leipzig lose the game next week and if Dortmund win theirs, they're both on 33 points.
Yeah, I think RB under Marco Rose are still very much a work in progress. Perhaps they need to be expected given the amount of changes in the summer. It works on occasion. Louis Openda has had a very good first half of the season, but he was at fault with his profligacy against Frankfurt. Three or four really good chances, a couple of them really well saved by Kevin Trapp, actually, who was, I think, probably after Mario Götze, Frankfurt's best player. They're gonna need to be a bit more clinical in front of goal. Breaking down defences is perhaps an issue for them as well when faced with a Frankfurt team who's just that's increasingly deep. RB didn't necessarily have the tools to unlock them. Perhaps in the way in previous years you might have seen someone like Christopher Nkunku or Emil Forsberg having the tools to break down those defences. Dani Olmo is one who still can. Obviously he made his return in the second. Probably wasn't quite fit enough or have enough time to really influence the game, but he'll be vital for them going forward as long as he can stay fit. And there's other interesting stat which I came across, and this concerns RB coming from behind in games. This was the fifth time this season where they've fallen behind, and it led to their fourth defeat in those situations. The one time they have come from behind was quite early in the season when they came back, I think, away at Stuttgart and won 5-1. That must be match day 2 or 3 or something. So certainly before Stuttgart really got rolling. Three clear issues there for Marco Rose to sort out. Coming from behind, efficiency in front of goal, and breaking down deep line defences.
That stat about not coming back is an interesting one, because I think that is the sort of stat that comes about when you have a huge turnover in your squad and when you lose several experienced players, because they have so much talent. But, you know, falling behind and still having that sort of calmness that you can overturn a result based on your talent, I think that's something that develops comes with experience. And I kind of just sense that that's maybe something that the side is still missing. And I mean, maybe naturally so, because they are in this transition phase, right? But I think that is really, really interesting that maybe that is a sign of immaturity, Stefan.
Yeah, immaturity or just simply you know, as Matt said, a team in progress. You know, Marco Rosa has been there for a long enough time, but due to the nature of Leipzig and their business model, every 6 months, it's almost like he has to start again. And, you know, he knew exactly what that meant when he took the job, so you can only have so much sympathy for him. But I think, you know, that kind of work in progress, or the fact that they aren't quite clicking together, was perfectly illustrated through the way they were penned on Cesco. Really kind of struggled to play off one another. There's definitely a moment, and I think it was the first half, where Penda's kind of runs down the right-hand side of the box and he cuts it back to Cesco as a counter-attack. And instead of just kind of finessing it to him, he just fires it right at Cesco, and Cesco completely mishits it because he wasn't expecting it that hard. And, you know, they're both very different types of players. Openda, to me, strikes me as a player who's all about power. He's very physical. He wants to tussle with the central defender and just kind of smash that ball as hard as he can into the back of the net. Cesco, far more of a kind of technical player. He likes to turn defenders. He likes to play off players. And, you know, in time, that kind of yin and yang could work perfectly well. But this is a game where it didn't work at all. And maybe that's because the two of them are still finding their feet, or maybe it's a case of, you know, this team just looking a little jaded after winter break. And, you know, like I said, when we were talking about Leverkusen, I don't want to be too harsh on Leipzig here, because I feel like if this was maybe the third or fourth game after the winter break, they'd probably win this quite comfortably. Well, not comfortably, but as comfortably as you'd expect them to beat Frankfurt. But because of the first game back, because of the kind of sucker punch nature of the goal, and the fact they're up against a Frankfurt side who, you know, although they're missing quite a lot of players defensively, they're pretty well set. And they were more or less ready to just kind of sit back and let Kevin Trapp pull off miracles between the posts, that everything just kind of conspired against Leipzig in this game. And they've now got a difficult run. I think they've got Leverkusen. They've got someone else who's quite difficult, and then they have Union Berlin. If you give me a moment, I could probably tell you quite quickly.
In the meantime, though, we can definitely go through Eintracht Frankfurt's next few fixtures, which are decidedly easier, at least on paper. Darmstadt, okay, derby, admittedly, but you would expect Frankfurt to win that. Mainz, Köln. Mainz, yeah, okay, interesting. Maybe you have to speak to some people in Hessen to see to what extent those two fixtures. It's a derby for Mainz, and definitely a derby for Darmstadt. Their fans made that quite clear against Dortmund, and they were looking forward to the game against Frankfurt. Köln and then Bochum. They've made, you know, good signings too, I think, in particularly in Sascha Kalajdzic and potentially in Donny van de Beek, although also had a difficult couple of years at United. Not the only one, I think, as we've discussed. Interesting to see how they can build on this now, because they've got a decent run of fixtures coming up.
And I'm glad you point that out, because they're only 6 points behind Leipzig themselves.
6 points off so far, yeah.
Just to jump in now, there, guys, Leipzig have Leverkusen, Stuttgart, Union Berlin, and then away to Augsburg before they then play the first leg of the Real Madrid game, or the Real Madrid, Tigers Real Madrid. So, I mean, Augsburg away is never really an easy tie, but that's probably obviously Union Berlin aren't quite the monsters that they were in previous years, but they are kind of getting back on their feet. Difficult time for Marco Rosa. That's what happens when you're at the top. You have to kind of get results in these big games.
Difficult time for the ticket office as well, I think, at RB Leipzig. Just looking at the official attendance was apparently 45,867, which would make the ground 97.5% full. Now, anyone who took even just a cursory glance at the TV at any point in that game can see that that is absolutely a lie. So, I don't know. They told us that Leipzig was a football mad city, desperate for top level football. Well, I don't know. Where are all these people then?
Oh, I don't know. It did look full.
It did not. It's absolutely. I'm looking at the pictures.
There were some empty seats, but it didn't. There's a difference between tickets sold and people attending.
Yeah, clearly.
Also, I think it was -8 leading up to that game. In Saxony is obviously a place where it gets very, very cold. Berlin as well, obviously, is famous for its cold. But yeah, it's obviously a fair point, Matt. It's something that obviously rival fans throw at the club all the time. But I think every football fan probably reaches a point when their season take a hold and they think, nah, I'm just going to sit home and watch conference today, I think.
Yeah, and I think that was definitely one of them. You know, we're out of time. I just really quickly wanted to say a couple of things about the Stuttgart-Gladbach game because I thought that was a fascinating fixture. I'm going to keep this brief so we can wrap this up. One thing that I really noticed while I watched this this game on my stationary bike on Sunday morning was that it's really fascinating for me how Gladbach always do really well against teams that love possession. And Stuttgart is a team that under Sebastian Hoeneß does love to have the ball. They had the ball a lot. But it's such a... Whenever Gladbach do play well against these big... They always do play well against these big teams, I think, because they just don't want to have the ball. They're really, really good whenever they can counterattack really quickly. And they did this in fantastic fashion in quick succession against Stuttgart to start the match. Stuttgart then almost did come back before conceding a third. I just wanted to point that out, that I thought that was a really interesting interesting thing that we need to keep an eye on. Guys, Gladbach, slowly but surely, creeping up there.
Very slowly, quite surely. I was going to mention Robert Nicolas, the goalkeeper. He's getting, making quite a name for himself this season. I think he's been quite quietly impressive.
They've actually, you're absolutely right, man. They obviously had that really difficult start to the season where they... went their first five games without winning. Then they picked up a really important 3-1 win at Bochum. And since then, they've actually been the seventh best team in the Bundesliga in terms of form, which is really quite surprising if you think about it. But yeah, and we all know that Gerardo Sion is a good coach. But the only thing, something that did make me laugh this when I saw this today, when I was kind of going through the news, was that the kind of perennial, never-ending Florian Neuhaus rumor mill is back into full action, and I was someone was asking me about it at work today, and I was like, it feels like every time Gladbach get back on their feet, Florian Neuhaus. I mean, look, before I start making accusations, by no means am I suggesting that he's the source of these stories, but it seems as though every time they suddenly start to look half decent, somewhere on the internet, someone pushes a button and the internet is just awash with Florian Neuhaus transfer stories.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think he's the never-ending transfer story. It's kind of like how Julian Brandt for what feels like a decade now was linked to Arsenal. yeah, I don't know. This is for the transfer show. And I think that's a really good place to wrap up this show. Which is, as always, brought to you by Bet Online. Guys, this was great. Matt, welcome full time now. It's really great to have you on board. Just want to reiterate that I'm really looking forward to your first newsletter, first full official newsletter, midweek newsletter, of course, because you've written tons on games. So really looking forward to that. And yeah, Stefan's newsletter will be out. As he mentioned, it will be on Götze, right, Stefan? Yes. And then I don't know yet what I'm going to write about. So I'll probably think about it today and then have announce it later on, or it will just be out. Thank you for listening, everyone. Sign up for the extra content if you haven't yet, and we'll be back soon with more. Until then, auf Wiedersehen. In Sicht.